Well, we have next an interview with the spoken word troupe from the Bay Area called the Balto Spoken Word Troupe, and we interviewed them about 1 week ago on the way to the airport. They say that their mission is to jumpstart creative works of the political imagination in these mad times. And so we interviewed four of the members on the way back to the airport. So we begin this interview by asking George, one of the co-founders of the group, how the group was founded.
It originally began with me and James Chasey, who's not here right now. We found out that John Trudell was coming to town, and we really wanted to open for him. So we bugged the people in La Pena to let us open for him. They gave us a grand total of 10 minutes. And they kept saying, well, what are y'all's names? What are y'all's names? And so James just came up with the name Molotov Mouths. And we did this performance. And basically, from there, we brought in Ananda Estevao, who's not here. She's back in San Francisco or Oakland teaching. And then we brought in Danny Montgomery, and then Leroy, Josiah, and
Taco Shop.
And then we brought in our newest, Raw Knowledge, and then we brought in our newest member, Soledad. That's how it began.
And what does the name Molotov Mouths represent in terms of where your poetry is coming from, George?
Well, we're a little different than most poetry groups. Ourselves very political, and especially today in post 9/11 world, you know, our stuff is very fiery. It's what we want to do is we want to incite thought, you know, just and almost it has to be sometimes in a violent way, you know, not in a violent like I'm going to attack you in a violent way, but like, you know, our words. The passion we use, you know, we need to break through this barrier that's been put up, you know, by, you know, what the U.S. government tells people about what's going on and what's really going on, because they're two different things. And sometimes, you know, people buy into one and the other just gets left out. So this way, this is like a bomb, you know, we're dropping this poetic, you know, political bomb.
What is it about poetry as a medium that especially speaks to you all and seems to be a good way of communicating these political ideas?
Well, I would jump in and just say that it's the directness of poetry, especially the work that we do, which is very much rooted in performance. A lot of us have backgrounds that are coming from, you know, from punk, from hip-hop, from rock and roll, where, you know, we're trying to speak directly to our experiences and hopefully invoke and incite, you know, change in the audience as well. So it's much more of a direct process than some of the poetry you get, which is more page-oriented sometimes.
Josiah, you also identify yourself as a storyteller. How does poetry itself tell stories about people's lives?
Well, storytelling has been an integral part of Latino culture since the beginning, since it's... You know, that's the way Cesar communicated things in the fields when he was marching. That's the way the corridos, which are some of the most famous, you know, songs in Mexico, it's all about storytelling with us. We're a very, very, very oral culture. And that's what I am. I'm a storyteller. And like me and George, we preserve our cultura by talking about it this way, you know. And that's basically what that is, the storytelling part of it. If it wasn't for that, my stuff wouldn't exist.
And Leroy, can you talk about how you see activism and poetry coming together in terms of the two not always being associated with each other, but in your work it clearly is?
Yes, activism in the arts is very, for me, it goes hand in hand. Just getting the message out there in a poem would open the eyes of a lot of activists. We use poetry in our protests in City Hall back in San Francisco, and it really opens the eyes of supervisors and other politicians. And sometimes it's not preaching to the choir, but it's having this creative flow, and people, you know, come away with it really thinking about what we're saying and about the action that they can take.
Would you like to read a poem for the audience?
Yes, I would. I would like to start out with, this is called White Money. And I wrote this because I have an organization called Disability Advocates of Minorities Organization, and a lot of nonprofits, especially people of color, nonprofits have to rely on grants. And unfortunately, sometimes those grants are not coming to people of color foundations. So this is called White Money. Show me the money. White men on green, in debt before we are 20. Loans for higher education, bail too high, life in prison, depended on grants. Black owned with white money, white foundations creating a new plantation, shackles in our pockets, tap dancing for thunders, strings attached, the ending of the year hopping around like puppets, living in an abusive relationship. Black leaders plus black issues equals white money. Can't solve an equation with a problem. Master turn pent turn corporate turn institution. He has many faces blending into our black organizations. White money breaks loyalty, leaving the community for an office downtown with a view of the city. Divide and conquer. Uncle Sam cut welfare in the budget, while white money flows from Chocolate City to the home of the Black Panthers, trying to solve black problems, making revolutionary commutes. How can we keep everything black, Malcolm, when there are few black foundations? Fighting the hands that feeds slave master on white money should remind us of our history. Unfortunately, it depicts our present and future ball in chain in the bedroom, in our wallets, keeps everything the same.
That was really powerful.
Thank you.
What has been your experience in performing for audiences that perhaps aren't so overtly political? How have they, responded to you?
Well, it's so funny. We had a performance in Baltimore, and I think this tour teaches us how to really present our messages in different, you know, arenas in different communities. And so we broke down and asked them, you know, what's happening in your community. So we put it back in their court, and they had to really answer that question.
So, like, that kind of, like, brings the audience back into what you're doing. Like, so, like, did you, like, respond to it by, like, changing what you were going to talk about according to, like, what's happening there?
Well, I don't think we changed our view. I think we got really what's happening. Like, for example, in Baltimore, we've realized that there's a lot of broken down homes and evacuate buildings. So we took that, and everybody in Molotov Mouth experienced gentrification and experience that issue. So we really, for that day, did poems about gentrification. George did poems about the Mission District, and I did a poem about, you know, being homeless, and so we played on that platform that we asked the audience to give us.
Would you like to perform one of those poems now and talk a little bit about gentrification? Of course, that's also a very relevant issue in this neighborhood and in this city, in New York City and Chinatown and Harlem and Brooklyn, throughout the city. Gentrification is something that the people are experiencing and also fighting back against. So, George, you're going to read your poem about gentrification in the Mission?
Sorry about that. Yeah. To me, along with gentrification, there's a lot of things killing our neighborhoods, and I think one of the major things that's killing the neighborhoods is that helps gentrification move in is that there's a lot of violence in my neighborhood. And it's a war. There's a war going on. Like, there's a war going on in Harlem. Like, there's a war going on in D.C. Like, there's a war going on in Philadelphia. We see it everywhere. And this is what I wrote, you know, so people can understand that this is what we're trying to deal with, so it's not being pushed into another area. And it goes like this. Children don't seem to smile as much as they used to. Their emotions frozen like gunshots in time. Gunshots don't even faze their young eyes. Eyes that used to twinkle with the promise of a penny or a birthday or Christmas now house a shadow of death. It's like you see, you look deep enough and you're allowed to enter. So you see your death, their death, my death. Bang, bang, bang. It's all over, but the screaming still remains. Dumpster housing drips with lost American dreams, and I'm sick of seeing young brown kids being beaten down by ignorant laws which keep the beings drowning in concrete rivers of sadness and sorrow. Bang, bang, bang. It's all over, but the death stare still remains. Only to see what's left of the world in one last gasp. Bloody clothes, crying mother, uninterested onlooker. Jesus Christ's story don't even have a good ending, and it won't even make the front page. Bang, bang, bang. It's all over, but this memory will always remain. Kids mimic cool homeboy TV heroes to see who can be the tough guy, because you see, tough guys don't feel pain. Because tough guys don't cry. And if this tough guy is cool enough, he might get himself a gun. He might get himself a pocket full of that dope, a lot of money, a pair of them really fancy Air Jordans if he's lucky. You see, bang, bang, bang. It's nothing but a dream, but a bad dream. It still remains. No time to keep on playing at being a kid any longer, because you're no longer a kid. Keep your eyes closed. Like I said, you are no longer a kid, so keep your mouth closed, because like I said, you're no longer a kid. Now you're a man. Bang, bang, bang. And don't let them shoot you in the face. And like I've been appendicizing this poem by saying, and this is very important, in the Mission, they just don't shoot you in drive-bys any longer. You know, they're sort of humiliatingly killing you by walking up and shooting people in the face, point blank, which makes it impossible to have an open casket funeral. So your family, which is the most important thing in a Latino community, can't even view you in the end. This is how it begins. This is how that whole gentrification begins. You know, the media gets a hold of this violence, and then all of a sudden, with a talk of violence, you could turn anybody. You know, now we need more racist cops to come in. They push everybody else out, and now the area is clean for whoever to move in. Thank you.
And Soledad, can you talk a little bit more about that issue of gentrification and how it's tied into some of the other issues that communities of color in urban areas are trying to fight back against, and what that looks like, what those struggles are in San Francisco, and what you've seen in the East as you've toured?
Thank you very much. I've seen a lot of gentrification on the East Coast that resembles what's happened in cities such as San Francisco and throughout the Bay Area. There's a reoccurring pattern that I've noticed when I've traveled all over the country, which is that first white hipsters move in, white queers move in, and then it starts to be people that, you know, want to move in because it's hip and trendy and it, you know, it makes them look cool to their friends. And then it becomes people that want to live in high rises and, like, you know, live in a shishi part of town. And that is a consistent pattern that I see over and over again. And every single time that pattern displaces poor people, single moms, people of color, trans people, intersex people, poor queers, just down the line.
And what about how people are responding and how your poetry interacts with those grassroots struggles?
What's interesting, it really depends on the audience, you know. It's kind of coming back to what Leroy was talking about. There's some audiences that really don't want to see somebody like myself up there busting out some poetry, you know. I mean, in addition to being a woman and being a lesbian, I'm also gender transitioned and intersexed. And it's like we're, you know, just all the way across the board with all that. We're, you know, we're supposed to be the ones who are marginalized. We're the ones who get killed in the movie at the end. You know, we're the serial killers. We're the, you know, the crazy people, the dispossessed people. We're not supposed to be up with strong voices, not only speaking about our own experiences, but speaking about things going on in society. So occasionally, you know, there's some resistance. But, you know, there's also people who come up, as somebody did to me in, where was that? Kalamazoo, Michigan, and said that they were the only queer person in their town and that it really affected them and moved them to hear somebody just speaking forcefully and truthfully to their experience.
Would you like to share a poem?
I would be glad to share a poem. This poem is called Intersexed is How It Intersects and refers to some of my experiences and kind of the interesting things I went through in terms of what gets called by the, you know, what I would call kind of the psychosocial medical fascist experimenters, a gender transition. And in the middle of that transition, I started to discover that I was intersexed, which is actually referencing to both a medical condition or a range of medical conditions and a form of social experimentation to try to get people to fit into traditional physiological boxes of male and female. I don't think you can handle my body. My curves swerve like a bat out of hell and my lines define something mixed. You see, I'm different. Not just reddish-brown mixed race different or pansex dyke different. For while all these things are a part of me, they're not all of me. There's more. You see, when I was born, I was whole. My body reflected the realities of both Hermes and Aphrodite, hermaphrodite. But unless you want to be hurting in a serious way, I suggest you restrain your prejudice for another day called never. For I will never let you call me that to my face. That's my job. You may try to throw a lob, but unless you want a lobotomy courtesy of me, I suggest you curb your tongue and put it in park while I test your timing. No tours of my rhyme except at the management specified hour. So let me backtrack and lay down some wax so to burn some more facts in your brain, okay? Those doctors. They didn't get things quite right. As my wholeness didn't add up to what they consider to be a full deck of Mars or Venus, instead of praising my birth or maybe possibly asking what I wanted first, they cut instead. Listen up now. The proper word here is intersexed, and it came with a price. Before I could even hold down beans and rice, they held me down and did things to me that no one should have to go through without consent. And with the doctors dead, the only thing left are my scars, which restate themselves whenever I look in a mirror. But don't think I'm all depressed over this mess. Now I walk it with a big bone stride. My hips are wide and I flip it the way I want it to be flipped. My body transcends that chasm called Mars and Venus and fills the void of social construction. For in the destruction of the biological binary, I am born. So if you were to come up to me on the street and ask, Soledad, are you male or female? My answer would be, No, but inquire about my being a woman. I'll go on for days and days because my heart beats strong with complex polyrhythmic strains and 7-8 refrains just like me, or rather the tapestries of my maternal ancestries. No longer full of shame and dread, I am whole again, and the scars just mark the path to my past. And the rest? It's just facts, which is not the same as truth. Because if the medical definition of your biology is the only reality, where does that leave me? For I do not consent to my invisibility. I shatter that glass-free cage and tell it on the mountain. My fountain is receptive, my news is representative, and my life is anything but done. So that is my soliloquy. I stand and my body as one. It's my best, and now that I put you to the test, let me ask you again. Can you handle who I am? I don't think so, but I double-dutch dare you to prove me. So yeah, that poem is just representative of some of the things I've had to go through in my life. And, you know, it continues to be an ongoing struggle to write about that. And I would encourage anybody who's out there who's going through experiences like the ones I have to just get it down the page. No matter what it is, don't feel bad about it. Don't feel ashamed. Just keep writing, and eventually it'll burst forth out of you.
Are there any artists or poets or political figures you find particularly inspiring for your work? Or
let's see, all sorts of people. I find the work of Patrick Kalifia and the social theorists and Fausto Sterling, Alice Dreger, Suzanne Kessler, all of them are very inspiring to me and address some of my experiences. Also, you know, strong women voices such as Sherry Moraga, Bell Hooks, who else could I cite? Audre Lorde, you know, people that really speak to my experience down at a deep core level, you know, because I feel very strongly that, you know, as a person who's gender transitioned as intersex, frequently people try to put me in a box of, you know, this is what your experience is supposed to be, and this is the only experience you're allowed. And I really feel that, you know, not just for myself, but everybody, including everybody in Molotov Mouths, that, you know, we bring 100% of all of our experiences to the table. And as part of our work is to burst open the stereotypes of only being in a certain box.
Is anyone else that has any inspiring figures? Or?
For me, God, there's so many. One of my idols, and I use the word idol very loosely because I believe that the idol is within you. But one of the idols outside of me is Ray Charles and his wife. Well, in the political arena, it's David Patterson, and he's a New York State senator, and he's just incredible. African American, blind, really, really progressive. He sat on protest lines on protesting gentrification in Harlem. You know, and he's in office. So him, my mom, of course, and the youth, the disabled youth of color I see coming out, those are my energies that keep on going.
We've mentioned people that have inspired us, and of course it's important to draw inspiration from, you know, political figures and activists and people like that, but we also can't ever forget the fact that, for me anyway, one of the inspirations and one of my favorite poems that I've submitted is about a man named Don Miguel. And in the time that I've known Don Miguel, he's worked probably about 250,000 lunch shifts, probably about 76,000 dinner shifts. And for me, for him to do that, you know, he don't write a book, he don't go out and march. He's you know, it's an inspiration to see that, because he's holding up a part of society in his own way. And in a very quiet way, a very humble way. You know, he's back there in the kitchen eating standing up. And I just want to say, you know, while we're mentioning all these people, we got to remember the working people. We got to remember that those people are there too. So that's who I get inspiration from, definitely.
Do you have that poem with you?
I got it right here. Want to hear it?
Yeah.
Don Miguel, he's worked 250,000 lunch shifts. And maybe like something like 76,000 dinner shifts in the time that I know him. Because, you know, Don Miguel, he knows what's going on from the kitchen sink to Michoacan. Don Miguel, he knows what's going on from the kitchen sink to Michoacan. Don Miguel, he's got something in his pockets para las flores that don't grow. And he got cigar smoke for whatever comes out at night.
He got a curandero that he'd been going to in Los Angeles for years whenever one of his young ladies gives him the shakety shakes, because Don Miguel, he knows what's going on, man. From the kitchen sink to Michoacan, Don Miguel, he knows what's going on. From the kitchen sink to Michoacan. You see, Don Miguel, he got a smooth profile taken straight off a bullfighting velvet painting. He got a brown forehead full of sayings it's gonna take me years to really figure out. And even if that man were having his feet burned by the devil, man, he'd still stop and say buenos dias to you. Cause Don Miguel, man, he knows what's going on. From the kitchen sink to Michoacan, Don Miguel, he knows what's going on. From the kitchen sink to Michoacan, yeah, Don Miguel, he's been across the borders again and again and again. Man, Don Miguel, he's been across the ocean again and again and again. And even after all them times, man, he's always on time, man. He's never rushed, man. You never see him riding that overcrowded bus, man. You always just see him walking with his brown face held high, just like a folk hero, man. Just like Paul Bunyan, man. Just like John Henry, man. Just like Pancho Villa, man. Just like Zapata, man. Just like Chewbacca, man. Cause Don Miguel, he knows what's going on. From the kitchen sink to Michoacan.
Thank you. Well, we do have to wrap up in the next minute or two, but if folks would just like to make last comments about how it's been to tour around the East and what poetry is to you as a people's medium rather than an intellectually narrow medium of the ivory tower and things like that.
Also, perhaps you could give information about how to get a hold of you or how to get a hold of your book or CD. That would be really good.
This trip to the East Coast has been unreal. You know, we brought our message. You know, we brought our culture. We brought our message. We brought our struggle to the people on the East Coast. And you know what? It's been, people have accepted us. You know, a lot of people have opened their arms really wide and have accepted us in, which is really good because we're trying to bridge a gap, a really big gap. It's been great. I'd like to say that we do have a new book. It will be out in the stores August 28th. It's called Molotov Mouths, Explosive New Writings. It is on Manic D Press out of San Francisco. You can get it in any of the stores. You can order it off their website. The same with our CD. Our CD is
the same thing, title, Molotov Mouths, Explosive New Writing, so it's the same title.
I actually just wanted to say real quick, I don't know where all those rumors about East Coast people being mean and all that came from, because we have been so blessed this entire time that everyone has just been a sweetheart to us. And it's been a big thrill coming to New York and reading for our Boricuan brothers and sisters. It was a really big thrill going to St. Mark's and actually reading with the welfare poets. And it's just been wonderful. Thank you all very much.
And one more thing is that our book is on Manic D Press. So you can get it at www.manicdpress.com.
And also, as the newest Molotov Mouth, my chapbooks and CD are available at www.isiswonder. That's ISISWONDER.net. www.isiswonder.net. My email's on there.
Great. Well, Soledad, thank you, and thank you to George, Leroy, and Josiah all for coming in today and speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, New York.
Go, New York.
So, you've been listening to Rise Up Radio here on BAI 99.5 FM, and that was a conversation last week with four members of the Molotov Mouths, a poetry collective out of the Bay Area. They were touring the East Coast for a couple weeks. Their email address, again, is molotovmouths@riseup.net. That's how you can reach them. Search on the web if you want to find some of their other stuff. You can listen to MP3s online as well.
And this is Kat. We're going to head out again in the background. Michelle Ndegeachello from her new album coming out October 14th, Comfort Woman. And we'll probably be bringing you an interview with her sometime in the fall. And our engineer today has been the great Errol Maitland. Your hosts have been Kat, me, Nell, Stephen, and Saki. Thanks to Leanne for compiling the youth news. And this show, as always, is a production of the Free Radio Youth Collective. You can call us at 212-209-2948 or email us at riseupradio@wbai.org. And we have a page on the website, or you can look at the website being wbai.org. Or you can check out studentvoicesforpeace.org. This last track is, again, called Good Intentions. And I just also want to put in one quick note that we are compiling a CD to use during the next pledge drive. So any up-and-coming artists, conscious artists out there, young artists, youth, let us know and send us some tracks. Get in touch with us via email, riseupradio@wbai.org, and maybe we can put you on.
Now airing Fridays from 11 a.m. to noon. Check us out in September as we welcome back school. We're going to have a month of education programming for the new school year. Peace.
We're out. Thank you.